You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. Bueno, mi gente, welcome back to another episode of La Verdad Podcast. I'm so used to saying La Verdad Podcast, but in reality, this is el backstage of La Verdad Podcast, right, in collaboration with the Segundo Ruy Belvis Cultural Center, which, by the way, Omar's going to come in a second. He's probably right now closing the setup that we have over in the actual center, because tomorrow, we're going to have who our guest is here today, Juan Pablo Diaz. He's going to be performing at the Segundo Ruy Belvis Cultural Center, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But as you guys know that are watching the podcast and probably perhaps watching the El Backstage, this is the third one that we're doing. The last one we had, Inovia Luz, I'm sure you know them, from Puerto Rico as well. And then before them, we had Ife. It's part of this series that the Segundo Ruy Belvis Cultural Center has going on called Borinquen Me Llama. It's a series of bringing different artists from Puerto Rico, not only musicians, but also theater groups and artists as well, musicians here to the Chicagoland area. So it's a real beautiful thing. Today, we're actually honored, un placer tener aquí con nosotros a Juan Pablo Diaz. Y como yo le dije, como te dije earlier, we're going to do a Spanglish. Te voy a decir en inglés y en español.
Exactly. I can answer in English, but I think in Spanish and I can't help it.
You know, sometimes I think certain words in Spanish and certain words in English y a veces me salen las dos.
No, tú tienes que tener una mogolla en esa cabeza del carajo, pero at least I know I can switch, but siempre pienso en español primero.
Yeah.
Tú piensas en inglés,
sí,
primero.
Sí.
Porque están más acostumbrados en la aquí más que hablan. Siempre. But I have to translate quickly in my mind. So,
so how you been, man?
I've been good. Estoy un poquito cansado. No te lo niego.
It's
been a long day, but I'm really grateful. I'm really happy to be here again. In the Segundo Ruy Belvis for a second time. Una segunda vez. La primera estuvimos en octubre
del año pasado,
mm-hmm. Sí, a 3 semanas del paso del huracán María, which was set to be the annual gala for the Segundo Ruy Belvis.
Sí.
But the hurricane came and they established a fund.
Yeah.
The fund that it's bringing me now, I think, to play here and to do this mini tour. So I'm actually really grateful to be back here and be with you guys.
That's one of the things, too, that we talked about in the last couple of backstage podcasts that have been that a lot of the artists have come back on a second time, right? And then post Maria, right? And we could talk a little bit more about that, sure, and how it has shaped you as an artist, mm-hmm, coming here back to Chicago and seeing the support. Do you feel like it's a home? Do you feel like it's a second home? Or do you feel the heat from the people?
Well, siento el cariño de decirle ya un second home, pues todavía. Yo espero que sí, ojalá, sí, ¿verdad? Pero sí, me tratan con mucho cariño y mucho respeto. Y el tiempo que he estado aquí, que tampoco ha sido... O sea, tampoco he tenido la oportunidad de estar tantísimo tiempo, sí, en Chicago. El primer día, la primera vez fueron como 5 días. Esta también son como 5 días. Así que, pero lo que he visto y como me han tratado ha sido maravilloso.
Pero la última vez que viniste fue la primera vez que viniste,
sí,
a Chicago.
Sí, la primera vez que vine a Chicago en mi vida.
Ok, so sí. Did you try the hot dogs? Did you try the pizza?
I tried the pizza.
Ok, what do you think?
Awesome. I mean, don't kill me, New Yorkers, but I mean, I like cheese.
There you go.
The deep dish is not an easy. I mean, I don't know if I can name brands here.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. The only el acercamiento más grande que nosotros teníamos a la pizza de Chicago style, uh-huh, era uno. La pizzería
uno. Okay.
Allá tuvimos uno, okay, pero cerró la cadena, parece que cerró las operaciones en Puerto Rico. Y sí, sí es más accesible conseguirla en New York.
Sí.
Pero la pizza me llevaron a un restaurante aquí, Roy McGrath, que también está tocando conmigo, y me llevó a Lumonari.
El Lumonari es favorito.
Es increíble, literalmente.
Lo chistoso es que yo había ido a New York así como... dos meses atrás, uh-huh, y cuando llegué para atrás el podcast estaba hablando de la diferencia de la pizza, yeah, y como me gustó, uh-huh, no era me gustó la pizza que tenía allá, pero Chicago siempre va a ser
Chicago
home.
De Chicago, yeah, exacto,
es diferente, no se pueden comparar, son dos
pero
diferentes.
Así de las cosas que no tuve mucha oportunidad de turistear, sí, La vez pasada tuve la oportunidad de ver, fui solamente una noche en downtown, tuve un día en downtown que vi el Bean, el famoso Bean. Fui al Museo de Arte y fui a ver a, tuve el privilegio grande de ver a al pianista Herbie Hancock.
Oh, wow.
Que se presentó en un teatro bastante importante, no recuerdo el nombre, ahora se me escapa. Pero sí, es una ciudad maravillosa, una ciudad bonita, me parece una ciudad con mucha cultura. Con mucha cultura latina, con mucho acceso a la cultura latina. Y y lo que están haciendo aquí en el segundo Rip Belvis, manteniendo la puertorriqueñidad, bien importante.
Así and
que
that's one of the big things too, is and part of this podcast as well, is to be able to continue that culture, continue the culture that it, so it doesn't get lost. You know, a lot of times we come here to the U.S. and assimilate into the culture here.
And also the other thing that's really important is to build a bridge to Puerto Rico so that connection doesn't expire, you know? That doesn't get even lost in translation or anything.
Now, I was looking through online and Googling you and getting myself ready for the interview, and there was a lot of different things out there as far as what you do, right? Mm-hmm. You're here as a musician, as a singer, as an artist, but there's also a little bit of a background of acting that you have, right?
I still act in Puerto Rico.
Was that the first step to a stage that you had, or was it?
Well, the thing you have to realize that both my father and my mother are artists. I'm second generation artist from Puerto Rico. My father was really known here in the States thanks to, he was on the first cast of Despierta America.
Yeah.
My father, Rafael Jose. People like the generation of your parents may know him because he won a festival like Eurovision that was made in Latin America and in Spain called the OTI.
Okay.
And he won that in 1980. That's what they made his career, basically. Yeah. So he's been an actor, a TV host. That's what he's been most famous for. Mm-hmm. Actor, singer as well. Yeah. And my mother is a well-known artist in Puerto Rico. She's an actress. She's been in TV also. She's been a presenter for TV. Yeah. She's been a producer. So it runs in the family. So I've been in the business for as long as I can remember.
So being in the spotlight, it's not nothing weird to you. It's already there.
As an artist, no. As an artist, no. But I'm not that type of people that mix their personal lives with the artistic life. I like to live a really private life. Yo nunca he entendido esa cuestión de que la gente dice que porque tú eres artista no tienes vida privada. Eso es falso. Mm. O sea, tú te dedicas a entretener, you entertain people, but that doesn't mean that you don't have a private life. There are many people, many so-called artists that mix the things, you know. Mm-hmm. You have the reality show people, and you have people that are famous because they're famous, and that's it.
Y es que en estos tiempos también con la accesibilidad que uno tiene como a Snapchat or Instagram stories, I feel like the artists nowadays, that's why you have so many artists that are coming out by using those type of social media. So what tips and tricks have you learned being in the trade to keep your private life private? Because I feel like nowadays, like with Snapchat and all that, I think it's kind of hard. I don't know.
It's hard, but you in difference of a diferencia de en otros momentos donde pues sí había una cosa que era entertainment news que sí se meten a tu vida. La gran herramienta que te da las redes sociales es que tú you decide what you want to share and what not. Mm-hmm. And when you don't want to share anything, you don't. And when you want to share it, you do.
Yeah.
That's why those type of entertainment news shows, like gossip shows, are getting like, están como que desaparecidos, are disappearing, basically.
Yeah.
Because now they don't get to make the gossip because yo como artista te puedo desmentir en un snap, en un tweet, en un Insta story. ¿Sabes? Que esa es la diferencia. O sea, por un lado es bueno, pero por otro es lo que yo veo diferente. Entonces es que le das oportunidad a gente que no necesariamente quiere hacer arte, sino quiere la fama.
Sí.
Y entonces pues se convierte en famosos por ser famoso. Sí. Y ahora todo el mundo como que quiere aspirar a eso.
And it happens a lot. I mean, I see it every single day. I follow a lot of podcasts and a lot of artists from Puerto Rico itself. It's like my way of being able to stay in touch with the island. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them have started out like that, right? In social media. And sometimes it's the very, really dumb stuff that you see, right? There's no art behind
hay
it.
Alguna gente que tiene hay alguna gente que tiene sustancia y hay gente que no.
Yeah.
Por ejemplo, el caso más claro para mí, de los fenómenos de gente que quieren ser famosos por ser famosos y hacen cualquier estupidez, es el caso de Logan Paul. Uh-huh. O sea, Logan Paul se convirtió en un, uh-huh. un vlogger
yeah.
bien famoso, pero el tipo no tenía nada en la cabeza uh-huh. y hizo lo que hizo.
Hizo unas barbaridades.
Barbaridades, unas boberías que no tenía que hacer. Yeah. Y si hubiese tenido algún tipo de línea editorial, si llega a tener algún tipo de manifiesto artístico, pues no hacía la estupidez sí. que hizo. O sea, que hay que tener cuidado, yo creo, con las redes sociales. Y no con las redes sociales, porque las redes sociales siempre van a ser, es como uno aborda y para qué quiere uh-huh. las redes sociales.
Y también tener como un, like a plan behind it, right? So a lot of times, you can't, if you just go out there, uh-huh. empieza a hablar bobería en un podcast, right? Uh-huh. Y you might get famous for two shows, but then you don't have no consistency, yeah, no content that, behind
being,
it, right?
That fame is like empty calories, man.
Uh-huh, uh-huh,
eso no yeah. alimenta.
Uh-huh, exactamente.
O sea, lo importante es esto. O sea, tú tienes aquí... Tú ahora me estás haciendo una entrevista y dentro de un par de años pues uh-huh. vas a decir, mira, yo en este momento entrevisté a este artista uh-huh. con este propósito de ver lo que estaba pasando en Puerto Rico y hay sustancia.
Yeah. Yep.
Lo que no podemos perder es la cuestión de la sustancia y tiene que haber, aunque no seamos los más famosos del mundo, uh-huh. tiene que haber una resistencia de gente que diga, no, pero yo no quiero ser famoso. Si viene la fama, cool, pero yo no, eso no es lo que yo, eso no es lo que yo aspiro, yeah. tú sabes.
Y we're going to go back to how you started, but mm-hmm. I kind of want to segue into... the content of your lyrics, mm-hmm. right? Because your content of your lyrics is not just music. It's not just mm-hmm. sweet lyrics. You have a lot of, to me, I want to classify it as salsa consciente, right?
Yeah.
Very conscious lyrics. Is that mm-hmm. has that always been your mindset since the beginning?
Yes. I think that it's a great honor, but then again, it's a great responsibility to be in front of a microphone. And mm-hmm. microphone is a really important weapon. You have to use it as best as you can, and you have to be responsible yeah. enough to, if you have that conscience, you know. And I've always tried to be as conscientious because I like those type of, as a como espectador,
uh-huh.
me gusta ver gente que desarrolle historias con, no necesariamente con conciencia, sino con contenido. Que digan algo, que no canten por cantar.
O que te digan una historia.
Que te cuenten una historia, yeah. pero no necesariamente es como que todas las canciones van a ser de conciencia, de, o sea, porque uh-huh. tampoco, pues.
Yeah.
Pero que encuentren un balance, pero que tú sabes que cuando tú ves a un artista o cuando ves a un cantante frente a un micrófono, tiene algo importante que decir. Aunque sea en el vacilón, pero que tenga... No, no importante. La palabra importante es de lo que estamos hablando. Que haya sustancia,
uh-huh.
que haya contenido, que tú veas una identidad.
Yeah.
Porque el ejemplo más claro que venía hablando con él, con Omar, de él, ahora estamos en el mundo donde que por lo menos en Puerto Rico el trap está bien pegado.
Sí.
Y el dios del trap es Bad Bunny.
Ajá.
Y entonces yo al principio como que no entendía. Eso, o sea, yo poniéndolo bien paralelo en el caso de que yo pues toco de cosas de crítica social
uh-huh,
y,
uh-huh.
y trato de eso por un polo, de tratar de resaltar lo que está pasando en la sociedad, pero el tipo, el Bad Bunny, también hace más o menos lo mismo,
sí.
de otra forma, una forma más divertida, de más de vacilón. Pero yo siento que tú ves, a diferencia de otros traperos, tú ves una sustancia, tú ves un tipo,
sí.
no sé si él escribe sus letras,
ajá.
ojalá y sí, pero
bien
tú ves
diferente.
Un tipo que tiene unas referencias bien puertorriqueñas.
Ajá.
Y el mero hecho, the only fact that he doesn't have to change his Puerto Rican-ness
yes.
in
yes.
order to succeed,
ajá.
I mean... Porque yo me crié en una época donde te decían, no, lo que pasa es que tú tienes que cambiar esa letra porque los mexicanos o los venezolanos
and
no te van a entender.
And it's so funny you mentioned that because I was just, you know, we're talking about Chente, right, earlier mm-hmm. that I listened to his podcast. And he was just talking about this earlier, about two episodes ago, that... that a lot of people thought like that before, right? You had to change your lyrics. Oh, porque no me van a entender de... Si yo digo piquete, no me van a entender lo que significa piquete en Chile. Pero si ahora tú te das cuenta con este género del trap y está la gente en Chile, están hablando como hablan
bueno,
los boricuas.
Bueno, viene
¿verdad?
Pasando desde la salsa.
Sí,
ahí tengo
verdad,
que decirlo
verdad,
porque,
verdad,
por ejemplo, yo he escuchado, no me ha pasado a mí, pero yo he escuchado cuentos así como de gente que le pregunta a gente de Colombia, de Venezuela, que dice, oiga, permiso, ¿usted es de Puerto Rico? la calle Luna y la calle Sol existen.
Ajá.
Ponce existe, o sea que... Hay una cuestión de no perder esa puertorriqueñidad y no perder esa esencia, que eso se lo admiro mucho a Bad Bunny.
Ajá.
Sí, señores, te he dicho que admiro algo de Bad Bunny. Para los puristas, sí, hay que abrir, hay que expandir la mente. No podemos ser tan pendejos a veces. Yo al principio no entendía cuál es el follón, cuál es la... What's the thing with this guy? Y después, poco a poco, fui entendiendo que el tipo, conscientemente o no, también al mismo tiempo que es el tipo más pegado, también puede ser considerado una parodia de ese mundo del trap, sí, tú sabes, sí. Como que se los está tripeando sin que ellos lo sepan. Ajá. Así que es interesante, pero que lo haga de, más allá, eso es una cuestión, una conversación bien filosófica, bien profunda, sí. Pero que el tipo no deje de ser puertorriqueño, ajá, que tenga una referencia tan puertorriqueña, ya eso es suficientemente admirable.
Y eso es algo que por muchos años, especialmente si estamos hablando del género del hip hop, right, uh-huh, y del rap, por un tiempo, al principio, como que se perdió un poquito, y después vinieron los Vico C, vinieron los pioneros de Puerto Rico, uh-huh, que empezaron a tirar lo que estaba pasando en el barrio, lo mismo con la salsa, uh-huh, y entró de una isla tan chiquita, han surgido tantos buenos cantantes, buenos exponentes de ese género, no, uh-huh, solamente del género del trap, del reggaetón y del hip hop, sí, sí, pero de la salsa, como tú mencionaste, uh-huh, por ejemplo. Y me imagino que tú vas a saber más que yo de eso, pero si uno va como a Perú, like, you know, if you go to Perú, in the country out there, they have, like, Héctor Lavoe is like their idol. It's like, yeah, a, it's like a Elvis Presley for, mm-hmm, people in the U.S. Mm-hmm. It's Héctor Lavoe for them, and they act and, mm-hmm, they dress and they do things like him. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's really cool to see that, right? Coming from, yeah, the island of Puerto Rico. Yeah,
people that embrace the culture even more or equal as we do in the country, in the island, in Puerto Rico. That's really interesting to see and y por qué se la viven más que nosotros.
Yeah,
¿Qué es lo que ven en nuestra cultura? Because I think we take it, I don't think we take it for granted, but I think we take it as a given. Mm. You know, Héctor Lavoe was like that, oh, so be it, cool, but we have Héctor Lavoe, then we have Ricky Martin. But they stuck on that time period, and that's amazing. And many people in Peru, in Colombia, many salsa artists have developed their after the big boom of their, uh-huh, of their careers, ellos siguen tocando y siguen sobreviviendo.
And that's the beautiful thing,
en,
yeah,
Colombia,
that, sí, they're, sí, able, sí, to go to Colombia and keep their career going, mm-hmm, over there, and they're still tan guisando allá todavía. Totalmente. They're playing every single time. I see it all the time. A lot of artists that were pegado aquí for a very long time, they go, mm-hmm, to Colombia and they're still pegado. Yeah. So back to the original question of you getting started, mm-hmm, the first time that you stepped on stage, how old were you?
I was
to sing.
Okay, I think I was like, it was on a talent show, and I think I was like 6 years old. Uh-huh. But because I always knew that I wanted to sing, and I wanted to eventually develop a musical career, but I did not. No.
So you had that already in you? You wanted to do it?
No. I 6 years old, it was just for fun and try to imitate my dad, you know, what he did. And I wanted to do what he did.
Yeah.
But when I was like in ninth grade, I started composing when I was like 14 years old. And at like 14, 15 years old, I Boys to Men and Barrio Boys were like the shit. And I had a group like that.
Yeah.
And we sang in harmony, and I sang on the choir of my school, like from third grade to up until high school as a senior.
Yeah.
But that period of time of 14, 15, I knew that I wanted to make music. I did not know how, but I wanted to do music.
You didn't know what genre, like
what genre, okay, exactly. Yeah. Because I was developing paralelamente my career as an actor, and that's what I developed first. When I went to college, I developed myself as an actor, and I like put my musical,
okay,
career on pause because I wanted to develop as an actor, as a classical actor.
Yeah.
And I did. But I always did like the if there were musicals, I composed the music. The soundtracks, I designed them, so I wasn't completely out of music.
Yeah.
And then, like 14 years ago, I was making a play, and the musical director of the play was a musical director of a salsa timba band that I admire. Cabe destacar que durante toda esta época, desde los 16, 17 años, yo me convierto en un fanático, un cocolo.
Okay.
Pero empedernido.
The hardcore heavy.
Hardcore cocolo. As a fan, I enjoyed it. I did not know that I was going to sing. I didn't know that I was able to sing salsa. Up until 2004, 14 years ago, that I met this guy that was the musical director of the play I was doing that was I sang on it.
Uh-huh.
And I knew already the band, and I went to hang out and see the band. It was a really cool band called La PVC, PVC.
Uh-huh.
And he invited me once and told me, trépate, ponte a hacer coro, let's jam. And the first time I got on a stage making salsa, I sang the chorus dándole la espalda al público. First of all, because it was like a stage that big,
uh-huh.
basically, in a place called New Rican Cafe in Old San Juan.
Uh-huh.
And the band was like, we were like, with me, we were like 13 guys
uh-huh.
on that mini stage. Wow. So it was, there wasn't much space. And I was so afraid that I me aproveché y dije, pues no hay mucho espacio, pero déjame cantarle espacio. Cuento largo corto, me siguieron llamando para Payamián. Then I substituted one of the guys, and I stayed on the chorus, started singing chorus, and y me fueron dando poco a poco canciones, y poco a poco fui desarrollándome.
Pero en esos tiempos también, were you already writing
yeah.
as well? But yeah. in your mentality of doing salsa, or take me into that whole, you know, is that whole, you know, breakdown of, do you write it for a salsa song? Do you write it just as a regular song with,
okay.
you know?
I started writing for an eventual demo in 2007. I was madly in love with this girl,
mm-hmm.
and I wrote her a song because she wasn't as in love as I was mm-hmm. of her. Mm-hmm. Classic story. And that was the first song that I wrote and produced because I wanted to develop this skill in, of producing, because I was used to producing on MIDI, on computer
mm-hmm. yeah.
for several companies, including Teatro Breve, which was
yeah.
which was the company I work now. But I really wanted a lot of things. I wanted to reproduce that experience of producing in my house with musicians, with arrangers, and I wanted to develop that skill.
Yeah.
I wanted to sing, and I wanted this girl to like
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
And that song is called No Fue Suficiente.
Uh-huh.
And that song, I still make it right now. I still perform it. I'm going to perform it tomorrow. That was years ago. The girl got married, and everything's cool. And
that's a salsa.
And that, it wasn't a salsa
okay.
at the beginning
okay.
because I knew I wanted to do something on the tropical side, but I wasn't ready. I did not feel ready enough to do salsa because
yeah.
I did not understood how to sonian well. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
But I still developed with the PVC and still I was writing, seguí escribiendo por mi lado, developing this sound. And I was working with that for, I think, a year and a half.
Yeah.
And I was shopping around from record companies and managers and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to hand it to who was the Juanes manager. And okay. he listened to the demo. And it had one salsa. And No Fue Suficiente in the beginning was like a rumba with a string quartet.
Okay.
So it was really diverse. And it was too eclectic for the world that we were living. Now
At that time.
Yeah. Now, 10, 11 years later, that's what the market is asking, yeah. you know?
Don't you hate when that happens, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it sucks. But the guy told me, está muy regado, me dijo. Tienes que especificarte en algo. You have to specify in something. And then I did not feel that ready, but I knew that I had it in me, so I started writing salsa.
Uh-huh.
And I started with a couple of songs, and I show it to my friends and family, whatever. And then, in my mind, I said, I'm going to write an album for Cheo Feliciano. And I'm going to present with him, present it to him, and he's going to like it. I'm going to produce it, and he's going to do it. Blah. And I started writing for that project, and my mother was then dating, and was his partner, her partner was actually Cheo Feliciano's pianist.
Okay.
And he told me, why are you going to do that? So why are you going to try to pretend to, why do you have that pretension of writing an album for Cheo? You should do it yourself.
For yourself, yeah.
For yourself. And I changed a couple of things on this song that I thought it was really good. I started changing things and tweaking it, and that's when Las Calles de mi Ciudad was born.
Yeah.
I presented it to the late Jose Lugo, who was the arranger, and I told him, I have this song.
Yeah.
Could you listen to it and tell me if it's any good? I'm thinking that it could have this style of funny ass strings and a really pesada rhythm section. And he fell in love with the song, and we recorded it. And then and when he gave me that approval, I knew that I was into salsa for good.
And when you're composing and writing your songs out,
mm-hmm.
take me through that journey of are you actually already have the arrangement like in your head? Do you write out? Do you know how to arrange as well? Or
I've arranged, but I'm not an arranger.
Okay.
I've arranged my songs.
So you kind of have an idea of
sure,
how it
yeah,
should
yeah,
sound.
Yeah, yeah. When cuando yo entrego los demos a los arreglistas, I try to be as specific as, because I don't have that money to say, voy a separar 6 meses de un estudio y a crear. I don't have that kind of money or that kind of time.
Yeah.
So I have to be really specific, and esa es la parte yo creo que más divertida para mí.
Pero tú te montas encima, tú te pones un piano.
Puedo agarrar un piano,
¿sí?
Puedo agarrar una guitarra y decir, yo primero, esto sí lo tengo que hacer en español porque ahora mismo es un poquito tarde para explicarlo en inglés, para traducirlo. Yo trabajo de dos formas. Ahora que estoy creando algo nuevo, yo trato de pensar qué es lo que quiero decir, cuál es la historia que quiero contar o de qué se va a tratar esta canción. Y voy buscando la idea primero, de ver cómo más o menos voy de punto A a punto B. Y entonces, una vez llego, cuando sé que la quiero, pues lo descanso y voy de trabajo a otra cosa. Y de momento, pues, hay un día que, por ejemplo, un día estaba así como para trabajar lo que estoy trabajando nuevo. Fue como, esto puede ser el coro.
Ajá.
Y fui y lo tenía, el coro lo tuve ahí en la cabeza un rato. Y un día, y fue así, una epifanía. It was an epiphany. Yeah. Like, y yo iba a comprar, iba para una panadería a comprar un sándwich, y de momento empiezo como que a tararear y a llegó la idea. Y dije, no, tú no te puedes mover de aquí, cabrón, hasta que tú no trabajes esto, tú tienes que meterle. Y así, pues, eso es lo más orgánico. Hay veces que de momento, es que es relativo también.
Yeah.
Hay veces que tú llevas con esa idea años, mm-hmm. y de momento cogiste el piano. Ahora mismo estoy trabajando mucho en piano. Tengo la guitarra un poquito abandonada.
Sí.
Y coge el piano y de momento la canción sale en media hora, 45 yeah. minutos. Hay veces que estás un rato con el groove y no te sale, pero sabes que más o menos hay algo ahí que puede funcionar. Hay veces que yo trabajo desde el coraje, las calles de mi ciudad, desde el coraje, desde la molestia de lo que está pasando, que hay que escribir algo sobre esto, de qué quieres escribir de esto, pues coge la guitarra, venga, no salió.
Ya.
O sea, todo es relativo. Y no necesariamente las pienso todas como salsa, pero pues eventualmente, como es lo que estoy haciendo ahora, pues
sí.
Esa cuestión todavía no he descifrado lo de escribirle a otra gente. He tenido el privilegio de que me han grabado canciones. Víctor Manuel me grabó una canción. Uh-huh. El dúo Gema y Pavel de Cuba me grabaron una canción. Andy Montañez, Pedro Brull y la Sonora Ponceña tienen canciones mías que todavía no han sacado, pero que las tienen.
Sí.
Así que todavía lo estoy descifrando.
Yeah, porque yo a veces me pongo a escuchar, you know, or you know, just researching and reading, you know, people like Tite Curé, who wrote songs specifically for an artist, right? And
that's
and
a
had
talent.
An idea.
That's
crazy.
Of all things, I think that's an observational innate talent that he had.
Yeah.
Because to say, oh, this is a song. I always think the songs for myself. I still don't have that skill to say,
Esto me suena como para
esto. Me suena como para Gilberto. Esto me suena como para Cani García. Se la voy a presentar. That was Tite. Yeah. And Tite got recorded 2,000 songs, but he wrote 10,000 songs. That's amazing.
That's like every day, about two or three songs.
And he started. And he started writing like when he was like 40.
That's the crazy part.
That's
To me, I mean, it's a hidden talent that perhaps he didn't know he had till later on. He probably was doing it, and then eventually it came out. Mm-hmm. But you always have to perfect your craft, just like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You know, you started doing certain things, and you noticed that fell for you. You know, and salsa was the one that kind of grasped at you a little bit more. Now, your salsa to me, personally, it's heavier, and it's much heavier than what we were used to in the 90s, right? Yeah, and for a very long time. Was that always your mindset behind it? Was that I need to make... Because certain artists, you might ask, or I might see in shows or whatever, and they'll say, no, yo quería cantar salsa gorda desde el principio.
Yo quería hacer la salsa que a mí me gusta. O sea, yo quería hacer la salsa... Yo quería tratar de reproducir la salsa de la que yo soy fanático. Y yo soy fanático de la época dorada, de lo que le dicen la época dorada de la salsa, que es la Fania de los 70 a los 80, donde se hicieron, sobre todo cuando se hicieron álbumes de concepto. No una cuestión de... Cuando se hicieron concept albums, o sea, los maestros obviamente son Willy Colón y Rubén Blades con Siembra, con Maestra Vida, con También está Cheo con Estampas, con Sentimiento Tú, con esa trilogía de Mi Tierra y Yo, Estampas y Sentimiento Tú. Es increíble. Otros compositores como Johnny Ortiz, como Ramón Rodríguez. Pero Tite sigue siendo la figura principal, tú sabes, de el padre. Más que Rubén. También Rubén, obviamente. Sí. Un gran talento. Pero para mí la figura a emular... es Tite Curé Alonso.
Y ese estilo de... We've talked about this in the podcast before. Omar, you could join us right here now that we need you on here. We're talking salsa, so you know it is. We've talked about it before in the podcast. That's also my favorite, you know, genre. And my favorite time was that salsa gorda. And I wasn't even around during that time. But just seeing the excitement that I see from my parents or my father has been able to keep me going. I still listen. I'm like an old head, old soul when it comes down to it for that. So the fact that you do that same type of style, it's something that it makes me very happy, right?
Acaba de cruzar Omar Torres Corre.
Yeah, I think it's a little late, but...
Before we continue the podcast, though, let's plug the event that we're going to be having with Juan Pablo Diaz here at the Segundo Ruiz Belvis Cultural Center. I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, we're going to have him tomorrow, which... Actually, if you're watching this right now, it'll be tonight on Friday at 7:30 here at the Segundo Ruiz Belvis Cultural Center. Give us some more information on that.
Yes, actually, doors are going to open at 6 because we have there's going to be a salsa class and, you know, some salsa networking event with Lisa La Boricua, who, you know, a lot of people know. For her old days with the Dance Academy.
Yep.
So anyway, she's going to have an event at 6. So it's going to be open to the public at 6. And then we're going to hit, you know, if people come early, because it depends on if people show up early or not. We would like to get started right around, you know, 7:30, 7:45. Hit the stage with Juan Pablo Diaz. We're very excited about the band we have with locals. Amazing musicians, really excited. Some of the people that rehearse here that we book in different festivals are going to be working with us this night. And I feel like we have a really nice rhythm of professional musicians that are doing great Latin music and that are really putting bands together for artists of the caliber of Juan Pablo, and also some young people that are, you know, kind of growing up here and, like, finding out that they really like Latin music. Mm-hmm. So I think that this event is going to help us do that. A lot of our youth are going to be working the event, going to be, you know, like... making up the times that they haven't been in the class. It's like, okay, so you gotta go to a salsa concert.
I wish I had that homework.
Yeah. And it's torture.
Yes. And they bring their families. Everybody has a great time. Yeah. That's going to be tomorrow. Very family friendly. Tickets that are free are running out. There are a few left online. So we're asking people to really go and sign up for them. But it's going to be a great event, and nobody should stay home because they don't have money. If that's the issue, they just say it at the door and we let them in.
Exactly. And by the way, the link for that event is going to be on the description of this podcast, just in case if you're wondering where do you go to buy the tickets. Don't worry. You don't have to write it down. It's going to be on here.
Yeah, so. srbcc.org. Yep. And then summer dance show, that's totally open to the public, where like you don't even have to sign up for it. You just gotta show up con tu sillita, right?
Yep.
And then the other one is the World Arts in Evanston. So 7 p.m. also for summer dance, and 5 o'clock for a closing of the World Arts in Evanston.
Perfect. One of the questions that I had for you too, being that you travel a lot outside of the island, right? So in Puerto Rico, do you have your own band that you're playing with all the time?
I have my own database of musicians. Okay. I have like 3 versions.
Okay.
Two or three substitutes per musician.
Now, as an artist, does that make it hard for you? Like, I always thought, right, if I was a singer, that it would be hard for me to acoplarme with another band and you know, because to me, in my mind, right, it's like, okay, I have my guys, right? And if I mess up, I know that they're going to have my back. Kind of like that's my mentality behind it. Mm-hmm. What's your thought behind that?
Well, the thing is that, as you know, I come from a theater background. And then that's when the actor comes in. Especially the actor who has made improv.
Yeah.
And you have to abandon to the possibility to ¿sabes? De que la música siempre la va a interpretar de distintas formas, pero la música está ahí.
Sí.
Y la esencia está ahí. Y eso es lo importante. Yo tengo plena confianza en la gente que me monta, los directores musicales que me montan las orquestas, que llaman a los músicos. Reconocen de que, pues, no me las voy a echar, pero no es un repertorio fácil de tocar. La gente que viene a tocar aquí...
Está todo el mundo sudando.
Por eso, gente que viene a tocar aquí, pues, viene, tú sabes, a tocar.
Yeah.
Y entonces, una cosa que me ayudó, sobre todo a montar las orquestas en Puerto Rico, es que si, por ejemplo, uno de los músicos no podía, pues yo le decía, pues recomiéndame tú a alguien que pueda tocar este repertorio. Claro. Y así también fui conociendo a gente nueva, fui conociendo a gente distinta. Así que no, o sea, siempre se va a resolver.
Sí.
Uno tiene que estar en el mindset de resolver. Yo, por ejemplo, tuve un show en diciembre del año pasado en el Coliseo de Puerto Rico. Y la banda estaba bien, y el que la cagó fui yo. Y yo paré la banda y empezamos de nuevo. Yo tiendo a ser una persona bastante libre en el sentido de, porque he estado en la posición donde me he encontrado con directores que son rígidos.
Ajá.
Y entonces crean un ambiente de tensión que lo que hace es, o sea, poner al artista vulnerable. Ese no es el punto.
Le quita el
Desde fun, la ¿no? vestimenta hasta, o sea, no, que esa nota no se toca así. Sí. O sea, yo venía hablando, no me acuerdo, con un compañero en Puerto Rico ayer, sobre todo en la cuestión de las grabaciones. Yo creo mucho en los accidentes felices y también en dejar, porque una cosa es lo que uno se imagine. Primero, una cosa es lo que uno se imagine como productor. Otra cosa es lo que el arreglista reproduzca de esa idea que tú tienes. Y otra cosa es lo que el músico interprete de esa idea que reprodujo el arreglista.
Ajá.
Para mí es fascinante ver las discusiones que hay en el ensayo. Como todo el mundo como que puede interpretar cositas diferentes y tienen sutilezas y la manera en que, y cosas tan que parecen sencillas pero que hacen toda la diferencia, como por ejemplo en el coro. O sea, tú no puedes simplemente leer el coro, tienes que saber cómo se entona, dónde pones el acento, dónde está el ritmo, y eso, pues, tienes que estar escuchando la música y tienes que, de verdad, acoplarte, ¿no?
Y vivirla. Y hay que vivirla.
Sí.
Y es bien... Go ahead.
Sí, ese diálogo, that dialogue that happens, to me is fascinating. Because you come with your baby, mm-hmm. and you put it in the hands of these musicians mm-hmm. that have played it way less. Some of them are repeats of yeah. the first time yeah. he came, but others are doing this for the first time. So just that dialogue of two cultures, we have some jazz guys that are more yeah. jazz mm-hmm. guys than salsa guys, mm-hmm. and to me, it's fascinating.
But that's yeah. the thing with, yeah. with improv, for instance.
Yeah.
When you are doing improv, there's this exercise of yes and. You can't say no. So you have to... Tú tienes que buscar la forma de que si hay algo que no está funcionando, sobre todo, más allá de en la cuestión en vivo. Mm-hmm. Porque ya en la cuestión en vivo ya está el precedente del disco.
Yeah.
O sea, se está tratando de reproducir lo que ya se grabó. Sí. Pero en el estudio... hay mucho más espacio para negociación, para que tú hagas lo que tú quieras, para... Y entonces, yo como productor, si yo soy el productor, yo tengo que estar bien claro a la hora de yo decirle que no a un músico, porque tengo que justificarlo. Cuando está grabado, cuando tú estás tocando en vivo, tú tratas de reproducir lo más que puedas, lo que está en el papel, uh-huh. vamos a hacerlo en vivo. Sí. That's it. Si acaso hay alguna cosa que no funciona, pues tú me lo dices, qué sé yo, y lo bregamos. Pero a la hora de grabar eso que se va a reproducir, pues sí hay un montón de cosas, por ejemplo, de que a un músico se le ocurrió una línea, y entonces que eso pasó con Canten. Hay una línea que fue un invento del bajista de José Amey. Y entonces a mí me gustó, y le dije a Luis García, incluyela en la cuerda, y eso lo he hecho. Entonces como que... Y entonces, al final yo le dije, pero métela una cosa. O sea, como ese tipo de cosas que no hubiese pasado si hubiese... ¡No! ¡No toques eso! ¡Eso no fue lo que se escribió! Yeah. ¡Eso no va ahí! No, y eso son yo creo que más inseguridades.
Sí,
sí. Y pues yo también estoy aprendiendo, ¿sabes? Sí, de este proceso de que me estén montando bandas. Sí. Hasta ahora la experiencia ha sido maravillosa con los músicos de Chicago. Estoy bien... contento y sé que no vamos a fallar y estoy bastante tranquilo en ese aspecto.
And that's the beautiful thing too. There's been a lot of albums out there and great artists out there that have made a hit from a mistake, right?
Yeah.
Or some an ad lib part that they added to mm-hmm. that at the moment of recording, right? Mm-hmm. And that atmosphere that was there, that vibe that was there, added to that album and it became a top seller. Mm-hmm. I can't think right now of an yeah. artist, but there's a lot of people out there.
The Alegre All-Stars,
you know,
like when they would do these long jam sessions that they were recording a lot of this stuff live,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
like, so they were doing, they were like having these after sessions. So like they would go and do a concert and then Al Santiago, you know, would get all these musicians together. And he would have food and a party for them and the recording studio.
Oh, man, that's the best.
And basically, they would be, like, drinking and, like, having fun. And then, hey, let's do a jam.
Y sale and probably that's the best thing.
That's how he yeah. recorded all those albums.
A good example yeah. of a happy accident, Michael Jackson has
yes.
a great anecdote of the song She's Out of My Life.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that song, Michael breaks. His voice breaks. And he was so embarrassed because he thought he ruined the take. But Quincy Jones, being the master producer, mm-hmm. he told him, we're leaving that because that captures the essence of the interpretation of the song.
Yeah.
And I think that song became a hit because people wanted to hear Michael break.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
that's the greatest example of
that human aspect mm-hmm. behind it. Mm-hmm. Now, we're getting close to the end of the podcast here. I want to ask you, usually I ask those that are coming from Puerto Rico, right, over here, that might want to give someone that's possibly listening to the podcast or viewing the video right now and is probably getting into singing right now, right? What's one bit of advice that you could give that young person that's listening right now?
Don't. just be true to yourself. And that's a really easy thing to say. But, I mean, tengo que decirlo en español, estoy muy cansado. hay que ser honesto con uno mismo. Yeah. Hay que ser honesto con sus tiempos. Se dice fácil, pero uno no puede, ¿cómo te digo? La honestidad no es una cosa con la que se nace necesariamente. Uno va yeah. desarrollándola, uno va creciendo, uno se va dando cuenta, uno va trabajando cosas, uno va sintiéndose cómodo con unas cosas, soltando otras. Pero si quieres cantar, tienes que aprender a interpretar.
Mm.
E interpretar es una cosa que parte desde la honestidad y desde el entendimiento de la canción y desde el arte de querer comunicar una idea.
Sí.
Ya vaya a favor o en contra de lo que esté escrito. Es una cosa bien densa lo que acabo de decir, pero yo me entiendo. Lo importante es ser tan transparente como... O sea, yo no puedo bregar con la gente fake.
Ajá.
Y eso se nota.
Yeah.
Y yo prefiero mil veces una persona que me cante desafinado, pero con pasión, con sentimiento, a una persona que me ponga un montón de notas, y, pero que se sienta súper plástico.
Yeah.
Yeah. Y eso es interpretar para mí. Por eso yo puedo preferir un cantante como Camarón de la Isla,
ajá,
que es un tipo que no era conocido, porque el canto flamenco no es conocido por una cosa muy puesta, muy qué sé yo, lírica, pero hay un sentimiento versus, sí, cualquier cantante de pop que te canta cualquier pendejada para ser famoso, lo que, uh-huh, estamos hablando al principio.
Yeah.
Así que los que quieran, primero estudien a los maestros, estudien a sus contemporáneos, no solamente se queden en los maestros. Las escuelas no existen. Esa cuestión de que te dicen que no, que tú para la escuela, no, eso no existe. Esto. Y traten de desarrollar su propio estilo partiendo desde la honestidad.
Exacto.
Van a imitar a gente.
Yeah.
Eso es,
yeah,
la imitación. The imitation is the greatest form of flattering, dicen. Yeah. Eso es verdad. Van a imitar a gente, pero keep working on it y traten de expresarse lo mejor que puedan a través de la música.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk.
Gracias
to us.
Gracias por tenerme aquí.
Si puede darnos las redes sociales or any way that they can,
claro,
contact
que
you.
Sí, me pueden conseguir en Facebook en el fanpage Juan Pablo Díaz, Twitter, Instagram y Snapchat, que no lo uso tanto. Juan PPR con N, Juan PPR. Ahí me pueden conseguir, sobre todo en la más que estoy usando ahora es Instagram.
Awesome.
Así que Instagram Juan PPR.
Awesome. And for bookings or contrataciones?
Bookings, juanpablodiazmusica@gmail.com. juanpablodiazmusica@gmail.com.
Amazing. So if you have any questions also about the Borinquen Me Llama series that the Segundo Ruiz Belvis Cultural Center is hosting, go ahead and check out their website, srbcc.org. Right,
yes.
Or you could go on Facebook and also search Segundo Ruiz Belvis Cultural Center. And if you're in the Chicagoland area, please come out tomorrow or tonight, Friday, mm-hmm, at 6:00. We're going to start here at the Segundo Ruiz Belvis Cultural Center, which is located on, I bet you I get this right, 4048 West Armitage in Chicago, Illinois.
Yes.
And if you guys could go ahead and like, share, subscribe to this podcast, I much, much appreciate it. Peace and God bless. Mm-hmm.